will bring the February 2nd, 2022 meeting of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District to order. We always start off with the Pledge of Allegiance. Joe, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
It would be my honor, President Paul, if you could please stand, face the flag, and follow me.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ask the Board Secretary if she could call the roll, please.
Director Slauson?
Present.
Director Armstrong?
I'm here.
And noted Director Armstrong is with us telephonically, and I understand Director Corona and Director Record are absent from the meeting this morning.
Yes.
April, do we have anybody who's indicated they wish to do general public comment before the board this morning?
Not that I've been made aware of.
Very good. Thank you. And that will bring us to item two, which is our executive reports. And good morning, Mr. Mawad.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. My report is included in your packet. Under new and ongoing items, as you may be aware, on January 25th, OSHA withdrew its proposed rule that would have mandated employers to either require employees to fully vaccinate or pass a weekly COVID-19 test. The mandate's future has been in doubt since January 13th of this year, when the U.S. Supreme Court decided that OSHA could not enforce the standard while an appeals court considered the rule's legality. On a related COVID-19 issue as well, this year on January 25th, the governor and the legislative leadership announced an agreement on the next round of COVID-19 supplemental paid sick leave. While the legislative body has not yet formally voted on the package, we've previewed the language, and it provides any full-time employees with up to 40 hours of COVID-19 supplemental paid leave on a retroactive basis starting from January 1st of this year through September 30th of 2022. To receive the pay, employees will be required to show proof that they or a member of their family have tested positive for COVID-19 via a diagnostic test. We continue to monitor those developments, and we're preparing to implement the new requirements accordingly. Also, under new and ongoing items, as I mentioned at the last board meeting, we are looking at our recycled water storage capacity, and in response to our desire to avoid discharge of recycled water, we have temporarily suspended allocation limits, and we have issued the special discount rate for qualified agricultural customers. That has increased our recycled water sales from previously around 5 million gallons per day to up to 20 million gallons per day. As you're aware, we produce around 48 million gallons per day of recycled water. The increase in recycled water sales has slowed the amount of recycled water that is conveyed to our storage, and our storage is currently stands around 80%. Having said that, we potentially may be in a discharge mode later this month, but if the demands increase beyond what I just described, potentially we may be able to avoid discharge altogether this season. The discounted rate that I mentioned applies from January 13th till the end of March 2022. Also, under new and ongoing items, district staff has been working closely with the Saboba tribe on a potential land swap in the San Jacinto Valley. The Saboba tribe is coordinating with us to identify tribal properties that can be preserved in a conservation easement in exchange for EMWD property near the San Jacinto River. The conservation easement would satisfy the mitigation requirements for our proposed Mountain Avenue East property, which ultimately will be developed into a replenishment basin. Eastern and the Saboba tribe will be meeting with the Riverside Conservation Authority in the coming weeks to evaluate approximately 25 acres of tribal land that may satisfy the environmental requirements. Under items of interest to the board, Danielle Coates and I had the opportunity recently to meet with the general manager and legislative executive from Irvine Ranch Water District to discuss past, current, and ongoing opportunities for collaboration and information exchange. EMWD and Irvine Ranch have a rich history of collaboration on various fronts, including legislative, regulatory, safety, and infrastructure delivery, among many other areas. I had the chance to meet with General Manager Paul Cook, and both Paul and I expressed renewed interest in further collaboration. This initial meeting was very productive and is intended to be the first of many, as new and challenging regulatory requirements and legislative issues emerge that will place additional burdens on the industry. And finally, I wanted to mention that this past Monday, there was a meeting that was held at Western Municipal Water District among EMWD, Western, Rancho California Water District, and Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District to discuss opportunities for regional collaboration and initiatives to enhance water supply resiliency. President Pauly, Director Armstrong, and I, as well as Linnea Alexander, participated in the workshop. I felt it was very productive. There were a number of ideas and concepts put forward for consideration by the team, and the general managers of the four agencies have been asked to collaborate to further develop an effort to vet and evaluate the merits, feasibility, and financial considerations associated with the various water resources alternatives identified. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Questions. I will just say I thought that meeting last Monday was one of the more productive ones I've done in my 16 years here. I mean, that was and hats off to Joe for helping organize that, Linnea. But I tell you, a number of ideas came out of that, and I think charging the four general managers here in to come back in, you know, 6 to 7 months and come up with a couple ideas that we are going to be able to paddle our own canoe here in the Inland Empire as far as water resources. And so I thought it was very good. Director Armstrong, any questions for the general manager?
No questions, but I would echo your comments about the meeting on Monday. I thought it was a really good meeting as well, and good ideas and just really strong collaboration. And I would just compliment both of you, our general manager and our board president. I thought did an excellent job in helping facilitate that meeting. That's all.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Laura, do you have anything for us this morning?
Nothing this morning.
Nick?
Nothing to report this morning.
Nothing
from you. Did you and I did you also think that it was a productive meeting, though?
It was a great meeting.
Okay,
yes,
very good. Mr. Matt?
Good morning. A couple quick ones. One is in the Reclamation Department, we've been working on an operations data project or database project for quite some time to replace some legacy systems we've been using. And this month, we wrap that up and finish the project, so everyone's cut over to the new system, and we had a lot of help from the IS department and also the ERC. They're using the system to make our regulatory reports to the regional board, so that project went really well, and we're now going to consider using that on the water side of the house, so that was a big, big completion I wanted to share. And then the other item is, you may remember, we started a project to put a second digester gas flare in at the Paris Reclamation Plant, and we completed that installation in-house, using district maintenance staff. And that project is also now completed, and we finished startup of the flare and successfully met our initial emissions testing. So the last step of commissioning is for the official AQMD monitoring to happen later this month. And that's also a large project that we completed in-house with staff that we're really proud of. And I wanted to thank the great job maintenance did on getting that together.
Very good. Thank you very much for that. We will then move on to our consent calendar. Do we have any members of the board that want a pull of item for further consideration or have a conflict or would just like a separate vote on any item?
I have none. I'd move approval of the consent calendar.
Okay. The consent calendar is moved by Director Slauson. I will second it. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Very good. Thank you for that. We will go on to our action calendar. Item A is to approve and authorize a contract with Schuller Construction Incorporated for $3 million under specification 1449 emergency fuel storage facilities and an additional appropriation of $4 million. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Edward Cerna. I am the principal civil engineer in the engineering department. As you said, I am here to present the emergency fuel storage facilities project and award construction to Schuler Constructors. So the district operates and maintains standby generators to power facilities in an event of an outage or emergency. During a long-term outage, such as a major earthquake, the standby generators have a limited fuel storage and can run for a few days before needing to refuel. However, in a large-scale outage, the district may have limited options to refuel as refineries and distributors may be affected. And so this project will install four 15,000-gallon diesel storage tanks. We will install one at each of the four wastewater treatment plants. This fuel storage tanks will provide up to a 7-day supply of diesel fuel. The wastewater treatment plants were chosen because they are located throughout the district and can provide fuel to nearby facilities. In March of last year, Spec Services began the preparation of a performance-based specification bid package for this project. We took this approach to expedite the design schedule. Also, last August, the district pre-purchased the four 15,000-gallon tanks for approximately $480,000. This was due to their long lead time. Pre-purchasing these tanks will expedite construction. So I'm going to highlight the general scope at each of the plants. At the Paris Valley treatment plant, the contractor will construct a concrete containment area and install the fuel tank in that containment area. The contractor will also install filling and dispensing equipment, fuel monitoring system, safety eyewash, and site lighting. The Temecula Valley treatment plant will have a similar scope. At the Moreno Valley plant, there is already an existing containment area that we will use. There is an available spot, and so the contractor will install the fuel tank in that spot and the associated fueling systems. And just like Moreno Valley, San Jacinto Valley also has an existing containment area that the contractor will use to install the tanks and associated fueling systems. In December of last year, the district received three bids. As shown on the summary of bids, Schuler Constructors submitted the lowest of three bids with a bid of approximately $3 million. The engineer's estimate for the project was $3.7 million. The reason for this difference is additional contingencies were added to the engineer's estimate to account for current market volatility. If this recommendation is approved, the contractor will begin in February and complete the project no later than January 2023. Spec Services is the engineer record for the project. To provide continuing engineering support, Spec Services submitted a proposal for approximately $390,000. Their scope includes reviewing submittals, responding to RFIs, and change order support. And because we did this as a performance-based bid package, they will also be responsible for completing the final record drawings based on the contractor's as-builts. So our recommendation today is execution of a construction contract with Schuler for the Emergency Fuel Storage Facilities Project for approximately $3 million, execution of a contract with Spec Services for engineering services during construction for approximately $390,000, administrative award of other necessary contracts to complete the Emergency Fuel Storage Facilities Project, and additional appropriation of $4,074,200, which brings the total estimated project cost to $4,759,600. With that, I can answer any questions.
I have no questions.
What's the normal lifespan of these tanks?
If
we're going to spend $4 million putting into the ground, how many years do we get out of it, I guess?
Oh, you can get about 15 to 20 years out of these tanks.
15 to 20 years. So this is just where my brain goes. 15, 20 years, as we try as a district to get off of diesel fuel and other things into, you know, liquefied natural gas, other more greener fuels, would these tanks be convertible to something like that? Or
I'm not sure, but I don't believe so. I'd have to get back to you.
So
again, I'm just curious sure. as to no, you know, long-term plan to put that money
on. That is something,
on the ground.
President Pauly, that we will continue to evaluate as regulations evolve
yeah.
In terms of requiring greener fuels, as you indicated. We always look at our existing assets and opportunities to repurpose those assets. So absolutely. Having said that, in addition to our fleet, the diesel fuel will also help us maintain our backup power at the treatment facilities yes. as well. So it does have multiple purposes. But to your point, we will always look at our existing assets, and if there's opportunities to repurpose them, we will definitely do that.
No, I will make the motion to approve. I'm just curious as when we – in today's world, as we start putting 15- and 20-year assets in the ground, and I've had this conversation with Mr. Melendez, you know, things are going to change, I think, fairly rapidly here. So I just want to make sure that we're, you know, looking at least over the horizon on it. So would you like to second?
Well, I would just add, unfortunately, you probably can't find a tank that only lasts 10 years.
yeah,
but I'll second it.
Okay, very good. Director Armstrong, did you have any questions on this item?
No questions. Thank you.
Okay. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 3-0 with Director's Record and Corona absent. Thank you very much for that presentation. We will now go on to item B, which is to approve and authorize a one-year contract extension and additional funds in the amount of $1.4 million to Polydyne Incorporated in the amount of $971,000 with Solus Limited Liability Company for the purchase and supply of polymer. Good morning.
Thank you, President Pauly. So by way of background, polymer is one of the district's highest cost chemical supplies, and it's used at our wastewater treatment facilities primarily for sludge thickening, dewatering processes, which ultimately reduce hauling costs of our biosolids. During the development of our triennial strategic plan, we spoke with the board quite a bit about game changers, and one of these game changers that is apparent with this recommendation is that of supply chain uncertainty. And there are a limited number of manufacturers of polymer that are in the U.S. and perhaps even globally. In fact, staff found only our current two providers, Polydyne and Solenis, being respondents to a number of solicitations on a national basis over the past year. And, in fact, of EMWD's three past RFPs, which date back over a decade, only Polydyne and Solenis or the companies they have since acquired responded to our solicitation. So it's a very, very limited marketplace, which enhances or increases this supply chain concern that we have. Over the past 2 years, as we all know, those supply chain concerns have increased. The global pandemic, of course, has caused a number of disruptions. Weather events in the Gulf last year in particular created a challenge with regard to polymer and other chemicals. Labor shortages, transportation constraints, fuel price increases, all of these things are creating challenging environments for our purchase of materials, particularly those with regard to chemicals. However, EMWD's supply of polymer in particular has been reliable. We have yet to experience any supply disruptions with our purchase. We did learn during our research on this item, however, that there was a force majeure event in Europe that was called in France from one of our subsidiary of our supplier being Polydyne. So there is a constraint out there that we need to be aware of. With that, staff are recommending the extension of our existing contracts with Polydyne and Solenis. Under the current conditions and into our current contractual relationships could result in even further increased price increases, as well as a concerning loss of priority amongst those suppliers. So staff did negotiate price and a one-year contract extensions. That pricing is summarized in the board packet, and I'll just review quickly the highlights of that. So our contract for polymer with Polydyne would increase from a current $1.16 per pound to $1.50 per pound, and with Solenis from $1.39 per pound to $1.66 per pound. Now, we purchase over 1.5 million pounds of polymer per year, so that is a significant change. The result overall on that is our Polydyne contract under the current pricing would have been $1.126 million. Under this recommendation, it would increase to $1.456 million. And Selena's contract would go from $814,000 to $971,900. So a modest price increase to essentially get us a year of hopeful stability in this market. With that, staff, water reclamation and purchasing staff contacted a number of local and regional agencies. We reached out to IUA, the City of Corona, Orange County Sanitation District, Coachella Valley Water District, to compare pricing that and the concerns that these agencies are experiencing. Three of those four are paying higher costs than the district, with the one that's paying slightly lower being a moderate less price. All of the agencies contacted expressed the same concerns with polymer supply and the chemical market in general. So due to those reasons, staff are recommending extending the term of our existing agreements for a one-year period. Over that 1 year, we will assess market conditions, develop a proposed solicitation. The bidding and solicitation of polymer is an involved process that lasts several months. And then we will report those findings and recommendations to the board in a year should the board approve this recommendation. So with that, it is recommended that the board approve and authorize a one-year contract extension with Polydyne. The one-year total for Polydyne would be $1.456 million. And with Salinas, the recommended one-year extension would be $971,930. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
We heard this in Ops and Engineering, and I'm satisfied.
Director Armstrong, any questions?
No questions. I think it makes sense, and just hope that over the next year, maybe market conditions improve.
Would you like to make a motion to approve the item?
Yeah, I'll make that motion.
Motion by Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Slauson. Make it a roll call vote, please.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 3-0. Brings us to item C on our agenda, and I wanted to take a moment and get the board's consensus. This item only affects the five board members. We have two of them absent today. I don't think there's a pressing issue on this unless I will take direction from others. I think it might be smart to wait until everybody, all five board members are present before we take this item up.
I don't have any problem with delaying it. Postponing it, SAPA did approve an increase yesterday, but all board members were there, all commissioners.
Yeah, so, Director Armstrong, your thoughts on this item?
I think it makes sense to defer it and wait for the other board members to be present. Okay.
I think, and I understand legal counsel, that could be the prerogative of the chair.
That's correct. If there's no action, there's no action. You can move on to next agenda
okay.
item.
Okay, let's
Phil, you didn't even have to ask us.
I'd like to get some sort of consensus on the fact that it's any item that affects the whole board, I think the whole board should be in attendance to discuss it. So with that, we will move on to our informational items. And I understand we have the Strategic Communications Master Plan that April is going to present this morning.
Good morning. I am very happy to present the strategic master plan. As you know, historically, we have developed our communications plans around individual projects or issues, key messages, and we've conducted outreach accordingly. This master plan is an effort to have an annual process that wraps up not just our key messages, but really the strategic plan of the district. There we go. So the purpose is to tie in the district strategic plan and those key priorities with our overall outreach. It blends together our individual documents, so our internal communications plan, our social media plan, efforts that we have in outreach. We want to tie them all together to make sure that we're addressing the strategic goals of the board. primarily those two strategic goals are effective communication, advocacy, and community partnerships, as well as superior customer service. So the objectives is to continue our efforts to increase awareness and engagement and accessibility to our customers and our ratepayers, reinforce the district's transparency and trust, and always position EMWD as the leading industry resource. So for 2022, the key campaigns that we have on tap are our Groundwater Reliability Plus, specifically our Purified Water Replenishment, which is the latest project that we're moving forward, obviously our Water Use Efficiency Programs and Drought Status, as well as our Paris North Program. Under customer service, we will continue to work with customer service to promote those self-service options for our ratepayers and payment assistance that's available. We also are making an effort for our regional education program, where later on in the summer, we will develop the curriculum for the next school year, and what we're really focusing on is career path planning. So in addition to educating our elementary age students around water and wastewater services, we're going to make sure that we educate them on career paths that are available in this industry. And we're going to do that in conjunction with our YEC program as well as our partnership with IE Works. For tap water safety, we want to highlight our new mobile hydration station, which is actually out in the parking lot right now. And after the board meeting, I'd be happy to have everybody come out and test it out. We are looking forward to being able to utilize that more now that the communities are starting to open up to events in person. And as always, we will continue our water bottle fill stations in community spaces. We've already had great success in getting them placed in nearly every school possible in our service area. And then finally, we're continuing our efforts for specific outreach to our Latino community stakeholders through their events and participation in their community groups. It's really important that we help educate them on what water safety is for our community. For key message development, like I said, we want to make sure we align with the district strategic plan. So we will develop our key messages and the points that we want to get across through our campaigns, through the meetings and events that we plan. And then we will deploy those messages through print, digital, in-person, and partnership relationships. And again, we're focusing heavily on engagement with our stakeholders and really trying to tailor their communication to the way they prefer to get it, whether that's by text or email or in person. We want to make sure everybody's getting the information they need. So as I mentioned, we have supplemental plan materials to this strategic master plan. They include our community outreach schedule, which are the meetings and events that our public affairs officers attend, a digital media plan. This time we're incorporating a formal internal communications plan to take advantage of the key 600-plus ambassadors that we have here working at EMWD. We also have a key message and tactics calendar to make sure that we're scheduling the outreach accordingly. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the education program will be developed for the next school year during this summer. These documents are extremely dynamic. Obviously, as issues come up, we will be tailoring them to meet the needs of the district so that we stay relevant. And another key part for the internal communications plan is that they will have slightly different key messages to really focus on EMWD's safety culture and our key projects so that everybody is familiar. Were they to be asked in the community about an event or a project, that our employees feel comfortable answering those questions. So to evaluate and measure, we're going to be tracking, as we always do, the statistics that we get through our social media, through our website, through survey calls, either at the call center with our customer service staff, or survey feedback that we receive through our biannual customer satisfaction survey. We also launched an employee communication survey this year. We're going to utilize all of that information and report back in our monthly board highlights report that is presented at the board admin committee. And then at the end of the year, we're going to be able to put all the data together into an annual report and then track that year to year to see where the trends are, where our growth is, and opportunities. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
I don't have any questions. I would just say I'm always pleased with your department and you and your functions. Especially the outreach, where not only do we educate the ratepayers, but they can educate us in things that we may be doing incorrectly or could focus in certain areas. I really appreciate the department because it sort of keeps the hand on the pulse of the, you know, who we represent.
Thank you.
No, as usual, your department under your leadership has done a fantastic job. I always look at the wide breadth of our customers, constituents, and the fact that we, are increasing our Hispanic language outreach is fantastic. I think in my time here has really seen us move into the way people communicate. It's no longer the world of a handout, a brochure. It's a tweet. It's a social media. I think our social media stuff is probably some of the best in the industry for California. So just congratulations. Great job. I always think, at least with me, an open door to the board here. When you see opportunities that we as a district should be taking, don't ever be shy about bringing them to our attention. So Director Armstrong, do you have anything on this informational item?
Just a comment to compliment the team for what they're doing. There's such a big service area with Eastern, and the amount of issues and projects and accomplishments and everything that needs to be communicated and in all those different formats and vehicles, it's an awful lot. So I think this is a great plan and a great job by our staff.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, April. Appreciate it very much. We will now hear on the 2022 State and Federal Lobbyist Update. And Danielle, are you going to take the lead on this one?
All right. If it's okay with you, I'm going to do a quick check with our lobbyists to make sure everybody's on the line. Aaron, if you're on the line, please acknowledge.
I am. Thank you, Danielle.
Great. And Pete?
Yes. Thanks, Danielle.
Perfect. Let's get going. So annually, we invite our state and federal lobbyists to present to the board. Given the current environment and the issues surrounding Omicron this year, unfortunately, we felt it was best that we not all be together. But however, we look forward to the day when we can all once again be together for a live presentation. This presentation does provide us with an annual opportunity for the board to hear directly from our state and federal advocates, who serve as the boots on the ground for us in Sacramento and Washington, D.C. These men and women enhance our legislative knowledge and our offering at the state and federal levels, and we are proud to have such a talented set of individuals represent us in the respective agencies and entities that they visit on our behalf. So again, online with us today, we have Aaron Namela with Namela Pappas & Associates. And Aaron will share with us the happenings in Sacramento. And on the federal side, we have Van Skoik Associates with Pete Evich providing the overview and Jeff Bowman and Ashley Strobel assisting with any questions. So I'm going to go ahead and pass it on to Aaron for our state overview.
Thank you, Danielle, and thank you for having me today. My name is Aaron Nimla. I'm a partner with Nimla Pappas & Associates. And my colleague, Jamie Miner, who also works on the account, just gave birth to her second child yesterday. You have just me today, but she, does a wonderful job under Danielle's leadership of watching things in the Capitol. So just quick overview, obviously, pandemic year three. The legislature is operating out of a swing space. We are still largely remote lobbying. We do meet electeds and sometimes staff outside of the building at coffees and things like that. But we mostly, in our formal lobbying capacity, we do a lot of Zoom. So call-in testimony, Zoom meetings, and they have limited and sort of restricted office space. We can go to the next slide. So the big news in the legislature this year, outside of the pandemic and obviously the ongoing struggles with drought, is the Great Resignation, which we know is hitting employers across the nation, and the legislature has been no exception. Actually, since this slide was created, we have had yet another member of the legislature sadly resign. So we now have 28 members who have retired or resigned, with redistricting maps being finalized in late December. You know, we've seen a lot of these types of announcements. And, you know, I think it's fair to say that many legislators haven't enjoyed operating in this environment as much, with limited ability to coordinate with their colleagues and meet with folks in person. We have seen three members leave for the private sector or appointments. It's going to make it difficult, and we just saw this on the assembly floor when they hit their two-year deadline on January 31. It's going to make it hard to pass tax and fee bills because there just are so many vacancies, and also more difficult for members to coordinate. Because of some shuffling around related to the chairperson of appropriations resigning, we now have a new chair of appropriations. You can see his picture there, Chris Holden. We've really enjoyed working with him over the years, very thoughtful man. He has been replaced at the utilities committee by Eduardo Garcia. And then as a result, Eduardo Garcia has left his post as chair of Water Parks and Wildlife and was replaced with Rebecca Bauer Cahan, whom you can also see in the photo. And then finally, Senator Hertzberg, who is the majority leader of the Senate and in that capacity, really affects a lot of decisions about the leadership package on the Senate side, including the climate package they're working on. And we expect that he will continue to have outsized influence because of his vast experience. But he has formally been replaced in that role by Senator Mike McGuire, who also continues to head the Governance and Finance Committee. Next slide. So specifically for us, as you are all aware, there's been, you know, some redistricting implications for our delegation. Assembly members Medina and Mays have decided not to run for re-election. In part, one could surmise that this may have something to do with the lines that were drawn for them. There's also one Senate seat up for grabs and three assembly seats within our service territory. So we know that the filing deadline is early February, but just early on, you know, SB 31 will, you know, we have Senator Roth in that seat, SD 19, Ochoa Bogue. SD 32, you know, many of you are aware it's Kelly Sayarko and Steve Sanchez. AD 60, Andrew Kotyuk and Corey Jackson. AD 63, Bill Asaley. AB 71, Matt Ron. And then AD 36, of course, Assemblymember Eduardo Garcia. Next slide. Sorry, I kind of combined two slides. We can go on to the next one. So in the January proposed budget, which we think of as sort of the draft budget, and you've heard us say this many times, for the legislature to consider, the governor was dealing with a $45 billion surplus. Of course, we don't know what the final surplus will be. And obviously, California has a very volatile revenue structure, but we expect, if anything, the surplus will probably increase by the time of what we love to call the real budget, the May revise, just given that that's when they will know the final number on tax receipts and the upward trajectory currently of tax collection. There was $750 million for drought response. You know, it builds on $5.2 billion from last year, which would be allocated over 3 years. Included in that proposal, because it is very much that for the legislature, is a water conservation program or a series of water conservation programs funded at $180 million, grants for, you know, all sorts of suppliers. Key within that is turf replacement, which obviously was a huge victory from our perspective. And we are working with not just the administration, but also with leads on the Senate side, which is considering a climate action package and have had significant traction with support for this program. I will mention, as Danielle pointed out, the LAO has been not super over the moon about this, so we may still have some work to do. There's $145 million for urban and small community drought relief, $75 million to mitigate immediate drought damage to fish, and then groundwater recharge. There's $30 million in grants there. And then $250 million in drought contingency. And then we generally feel like the bond measures that, you know, we were all so excited about last year will be eclipsed by the availability of general fund dollars. But we'll continue to keep an eye on those types of things. Next slide. I think we mentioned $75 million for turf removal, and this is just kind of a little more detail along the lines of what I explained. I think we can go to the next slide. We still have a number of hot one more slide. I'm kind of jumping ahead here. We still have a number of hot topics that we're following. One of those is the revisit of the indoor use water efficiency recommendations. You all remember Laura Friedman. If I remember, Laura Friedman had a bill. Senator Hertzberg had a bill. And Friedman introduced a bill 1434 to revisit the per capita limit, lowering it. While that bill didn't move as part of the two-year deadlines that finished yesterday, we do expect the assembly member to revisit that. So we'll be keeping a lookout for that. Also, SB 230, sponsored by MET, which would require the Water Resources Board to basically maintain and direct a dedicated constituents of emerging concern and drinking water program. We'll be keeping an eye on that. One, you know, we support the bill in its current form and expect it to move. There's been significant legislation, as you would imagine, and probably an early budget package today on COVID. While we don't expect vaccine mandates to emerge in that package, we do expect that there will be additional required time off for employees and maybe some additional statutory protocols. And it will be combined with a tax package that is yet to come into print today and will probably move this week. And then finally, there are two bills you're very familiar with that we continue to have our eye on. One is SB 223 by Senator Dodd. It continues to sit in Senate Appropriations. This is the discontinuation bill with all the new requirements. And then SB 222 Dodd, which is the water rate assistance program, still on the assembly floor. We will continue to keep an eye on both of those bills. I think that's it for our presentation.
Very good. Thank you. That was very informative. Director Slauson, any questions?
No, no questions.
Director Armstrong, any questions?
I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Very good. I had one, and this is a little off topic of water, but it does affect our district. I know earlier this week or late last week, there was the single-payer health care bill up in the assembly. I think it's AB 1400. And one of the ways we here at Eastern recruit and retain great employees is I think we, rightly so, offer a superior health care package here for our employees. And it just concerned me a little that if we're moving away from that, taking that out of our toolbox of retaining our great employees. So just could you touch on that bill and maybe educate the board just a little? I know it was defeated, but I have found things in Sacramento that get defeated somehow come back in a different version. But if we went to a single-payer system, how would that affect not only Eastern but a lot of other public agencies that offer – I would say top of the line health care packages?
That's an excellent question. So you are correct, absolutely. AB 1400 was defeated, actually not brought up, on the last day to bring up two-year bills in the House of Origin. It had bicameral support from a number of members of the Democratic caucus who consider themselves to be progressive. And I think, you know, the sort of behind the scenes, just to provide some context for maybe why it didn't move, was there were a number of controversial issues on the floor, many of which involved the same constituency groups. And, you know, what we noticed over the years, both working in and outside of the building, is, you know, there's a limited amount of bandwidth and political capital, honestly, to address these issues, and particularly in an election year. And so there was another big issue that was also supported by labor, dealing with restaurants and restaurant employees, and that seems to have taken a lot of the air out of this conversation. So in terms of the policy impact of single payer and the likelihood that it will reemerge, you know, I think it's absolutely fair to say that, you know, it removes the kinds, it could certainly undermine the kinds of incentives that employers provide in terms of top-tier health service and what, or healthcare, and what that does to help with distinguishing yourself as employers. I think the governor has suggested, even though he hasn't said this explicitly, that California's expansion of Medi-Cal, both in terms of the range of services and the constituencies who are served, including adult undocumented most recently, effectively achieves single payer without interfering with the employer prerogative to provide something which is more attractive to their current and potential employees. And there was certainly an argument on the side of the opposition that this would undermine the specialness of the top-tier health care that many employers provide in the state and undermine innovation. So that was part of the framework of the debate, along with a strong thread of if the state has had some difficulty with things like EDD, should the state really double down and provide universal access? And then, of course, there was the tax increase that was embodied in ACA 11, which, you know, had significant business opposition. Did that answer your question?
It does. I mean, I appreciate the background. And first, I appreciate your firm working for us in Sacramento. I think you do a fantastic job for us. I would just like to suggest that we keep issues like that on our radar here, just because, again, it is part of what we do to attract and retain the best talent here. And so I would just ask that as issues like that go forward, we add that to the kind of a mix. It's a little off topic of water, but I think it's important to the district and probably other public agencies that offer a top-tier health care package. So thank you for that update.
Thank you. We'll do.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you, Danielle. Are we going to move on to our federal representatives in D.C.?
We are. Thank you, Aaron, for your time this morning. We're going to move on to Pete. Pete, take it away.
Great. Thank you, Danielle. And thank you, Board President Pauley and Directors Armstrong, Slauson, and General Manager Mawad. Just on behalf of Vance Goyk Associates, I would like to extend our appreciation for this opportunity to present to you today. So, Danielle, if you could move to the next slide, that'd be great. So, if you're watching the news, you know the last couple months have been a tough go for President Biden and the Democrat-controlled Congress. For the better part of 2021, they had been promoting and working on enacting their social and economic centerpiece legislation known as the Build Back Better proposal, which was originally a $3.5 trillion spending package. And it was ultimately, over time, scaled down to a $1.75 trillion proposal to gain support of key moderate Democrats in Congress. Then in November 21st, the House passed its version of the Build Back Better legislation. However, the fate of the BBB had been teetering on the rails in the Senate for quite some time. And then a death knell was ultimately struck on December 19th when Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat of West Virginia, announced that he wouldn't support the emerging compromise package. And so to date, the BBB continues to be stalled. I have in this slide some other factors that have been contributing to President Biden's woes, which, you know, inflation rates looms large for him, and they were unable to this month enact their kind of landmark voting reform legislation. So his poll numbers are hitting at this point an all-time low for approval ratings. So next slide, please, Daniel. However, Biden and the Democratic leadership in Congress has not given up on advancing some type of strategy to advance a further modified BBB, which enlists the support of Senators Manchin and Sinema. At this point, moderate Democrats and progressive both seem to be ready to bend to salvage and enact at least some components of the larger package. What that is and how it comes together is still a work in progress, as serious talks are really not yet underway. Just quickly, what's important to note in this discussion of the BBB is that, and it should be BBB and not BBA there, but there are some water-related provisions tucked into the House passed version, and the ones that EMWD have been watching most closely in this process are the water conservation tax parity provision, which was in there. There was also $125 million to kickstart a new nationwide water reuse, water recycling program called the Alternative Water Source Program. There was $225 million for a low-income ratepayer assistance program out of EPA. And then lastly, $2 billion for a relatively new sewer overflow and stormwater reuse program. And EMWD worked closely with EPA in 2022 to ensure that program's implementation guidance would allow projects like EMWD's Quail Valley to be eligible. So these and a few other funding allocations for federal water programs kind of lay in the balance with the fate of the BBB. Next slide, please, Daniel. I know you have all also seen reports on the enactment of the bipartisan infrastructure measure. Unlike the BBB proposal, passage of this legislation was a major success piece for the president, with 19 Republican senators voting for the final passage. The bill represents a massive federal investment in roads, transit, water, and other infrastructure. And really, it was a big deal politically in that a large-scale infrastructure measure has been discussed and kicked around in Congress for many years now. So getting this national priority finally across the finish line was a big deal. For EMWD, the three agency funding buckets of most interest are the programs that lie within the Bureau of Reclamation, the Army Corps of Engineers, and EPA. Next slide, please, Daniel. So for 2022, the focus is on the federal agency implementation of the funding and new programs contained in the infrastructure package. Biden appointed an infrastructure czar to help guide implementation and help funding announcement and messaging. And the administration is also scaling up in a significant way staffing to help implement the infrastructure package. I know, segueing specifically to EMWD and the infrastructure package, I know the board has heard this news, but I'm also thrilled to highlight in what was the first major funding announcement associated with the infrastructure package was EMWD's $4.5 million award for its groundwater desalinization program. So this Army Corps of Engineers award was significant, as it was one of only three projects of this type to be funded in the state of California, and the infrastructure package allocated $200 million nationwide were in total for this particular Army Corps account, and EMWD was able to successfully leverage this opportunity. So I would just, my hat's off to the entire EMWD team. They did a remarkable job getting the DCEL project funding request in place, and that process started early last fall. As we've always talked about this project, it's always been also underscored that the Corps has been a tremendous and fantastic partner on this effort, and we also have to acknowledge and give tremendous credit to EMWD's entire congressional delegation. They wrote letters of support for this award, and some even called in to the administration. So, you know, with the $4.7 million the project received in February of 2021, along with this $4.5 million with this latest announcement, it really puts this project in a unique category over the last 2 years. So just once again, we're starting off the calendar year with a bang. There's more to come on infrastructure this year and as years to come, but you know, we have so far positioned ourselves at the early stages of the infrastructure dollars, which are just starting to flow. A potential fly in the ointment with the infrastructure package could be these Buy America provisions that were included. The significant element is that the statute now goes beyond requiring just U.S.-made iron and steel for products that use federal funds, but now it's going to be required that manufacturing products have to be made in the U.S. And so while there are some limited waivers incorporated into the law, the early tea leaves are the administration is going to be stingy with these waivers. So we're watching that closely. Next slide, please, Daniel. Over the last few years, we have seen the annual 12 appropriations bills enacted and signed into law shortly before the Christmas holiday congressional break. That did not occur with the FY22 spending bills, which all put together have a price tag of $1.5 trillion. The current CR ends on February 18th, but another continuing resolution will be needed to work on finalizing these measures. The kind of high-level major disagreement between the Democrats and Republicans is an allocation between defense spending accounts and non-defense spending accounts. There's also some thorny policy riders that are sticking points. So it's hard to predict how and when this gets resolved, but they're only going to be able to kick the can so far. And if they can't get to a resolution, they could look at resorting to doing a one-year full continuing resolution. For the district, resolving the FY22 bills, especially the interior EPA measure, is going to be very important because two earmarks are contained in the House passed version of the interior EPA appropriations bill for FY22. One is the $2.5 million for Quail Valley Sewer to Septic Conversion Project, which is championed by Rep. Calvert, and the other is $1 million for the Mead Valley Water Booster Station Replacement Project, championed by Rep. Takano. So it was extremely significant that we were able to achieve two separate earmarks in the appropriations process, especially as it's been a very restrictive reentry of earmarks this past year. So we're watching this very closely because with a full CR, a full continuing resolution, if Congress does ultimately resort to that, earmarks will not be a part of that final measure. Next slide, please. A few areas of focus on the federal agency side in 2022. I've already mentioned the priority focus on the implementation of the bipartisan infrastructure law. Some important regulatory actions on the horizon include EPA's PFAS action plan or their roadmap. There's a number of regulatory goals which they've outlined in that document, but the ones of most interest that we're watching are the pending proposed rule designating PFOA and PFOS as hazardous substances under Superfund. That one's expected sometime in the spring of 2022. And then the other is the proposed rule establishing limits on PFOA and PFOS in drinking water. and that one's anticipated for this fall. And then the waters of the U.S., an ongoing issue, which is about defining what are and what are not navigable waters of the U.S., which would then fall under the jurisdiction of the Clean Water Act. It's been an ongoing policy struggle for many, many years. Like the PFAS issue, though, EMWD is very active, engaged on this topic. And this slide here highlights the latest high-level actions that are going on. In the fall of 2021, the Biden administration rescinded the Trump ROTUS. They put in a draft rule replacing that with pre-2015 regulations. And then at the same time, their EPA and the Corps are saying they're going to work on an entirely new definition. But then just on January 24th, the Supreme Court came out with a big announcement saying that they're going to hear a WOTUS case this year. And with this announcement, the Supreme Court is expected to, you know, with the conservative majority, expected to narrow the scope of the definition of navigable waters of the U.S. And so this would clearly put a crimp into what the Biden administration currently has in store with a new rule. Next slide, please, Daniel. So I thought I would cover the current status and impact of COVID-19 protocols on legislative operations, federal building access, meetings, et cetera. For House, Senate, Capitol building access, there's still a requirement for staff to come outside the building to meet you, sign you in, and then escort you to the designated office. You know, it's unwieldy and somewhat inconvenient process for staff, even as many offices are now getting more and more willing to conduct in-person meetings. That said, there's still a fair number of offices that still prefer or will only conduct virtual meetings. And then you also have different policies with each office where many staff come in the office certain days or then they work from home on other days. Surprisingly, masks are required as you're walking through any of the Capitol complex buildings. On the federal agency side, most federal agency personnel are still only conducting meetings virtually. There are some exceptions to that, but that's by and large the existing protocol. Other interesting things to note, just since January 1, there's been 31 members of Congress who have tested positive for COVID, and just yesterday, House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer announced he tested positive. So the House is still allowing for proxy voting for four votes. You know, lastly on this, it's the city of D.C. has a vaccine mandate that went into place on January 15th. It requires proof of vaccination at restaurants, bars, movie theaters, and gyms. For hotels, it doesn't require a proof of vaccine to stay there, but for their fitness center, common areas, restaurant, or bar, you would have to show proof of vaccination. You know, what we're seeing here just from an association standpoint, you know, we saw that Aqua decided to move their D.C. trip to July in light of this recent Omicron variant wave. That was originally scheduled for the end of this month and early March. So they're hoping that things will be normalized in July and they can do it in person. You know, as of right now, EMWD's D.C. advocacy trip is planned for the last week of April. We are monitoring developments on this daily, so as we get closer to that date, if it's appearing most meetings will still be conducted virtually, we'll have to consider a reset on the in-person fly-in approach. Next slide, Daniel. As you're well aware, the congressional redistricting maps have been established. The map on this slide represents the new boundaries of EMWD's four House members. As I've reviewed it, it doesn't seem that there's a super significant change with the layover of EMWD's service area and the congressional districts of our four members. I guess the most notable is that the southern part of the service area will have more representation by Representative Issa. Marietta, which is currently Representative Calvert's territory or district, but moving forward in the new Congress, Representative Issa's district will incorporate Marietta. So you also see Representative Ruiz, a appears to have a little more of a service area currently in Representative Calvert's district. It's that south-southwest area of Highway 74. And then Rep. Takano's new boundaries, not exactly the same, but fairly close to what his current boundaries are. And then with Representative Calvert, he appears to acquire a small strip of territory in the very northwest corner of the service area, north of Marina Valley, which he currently doesn't have. So next and last slide, please, Daniel. So just very quickly, it's a midterm election cycle coming up later this year. That typically means that after July, we're going to see a ramp down of legislative activity. Just real quick prognostication, as a lot of this has been reported, the Democrats in the House, the prospects of keeping the House at this point are not very strong. They appear to be bleak. They're in terms of retirements, you have 28 House Democrats who are not seeking reelection. Conversely, it's 12 House GOP members who aren't. In the state of California, there's we have 6 members who are either retiring, who have resigned, or will be running for another office. In Southern California, Alan Lowenthal is retiring. Lucille Roboy-Allard, Karen Bass will be running for mayor. I guess also of note up north is Devin Nunes has already resigned on January 1st. So we'll see what the nationwide impact of redistricting has also on the election. As far as the Senate goes, for Democrats, it's not as dire as it's looking for the House, but it still might be a rough terrain for Democrats. We're still many months away, but that's where things stand. With that, that ends our presentation, and we'd be happy to take any questions.
Do we have any questions for Pete?
I don't.
Director Armstrong?
No questions, but I'd appreciate the very comprehensive report.
No, I echo all those thoughts. Pete has, for many years, done a great job for us, so look forward to visiting him if we have the opportunity to get back to D.C. So the only correction I want to make, Pete, is French Valley is going to remain in Congressman Calvert's area.
Oh,
so
thank you for noting that.
I follow the congressional maps closely for whatever reason, but so I just want to make that correction. Oh. Other than that, great. Thank you for joining us today. I always appreciate the work you do for our district, okay?
President Pauly, if I can just make one clarification.
Sure,
if we can
absolutely.
Go back to slide 15. I just want to clarify, the picture of that pipeline, that is not an EMWD facility, just for the record.
I appreciate that, Joe, but and again, on the in the, I am all for the Buy American provisions, but again, we have to, as a society, do this smartly, and I do realize there's some things that we buy here that are not made in the USA, and I hope our friends in D.C. can modify their good intentions to make sure it works in the real world, which doesn't always happen. But I do appreciate you, Joe, making sure that that is not an EMWD pipeline. So with that, thank you again, Pete. Danielle, anything else for us?
No, we would just respectfully like to thank the board and leadership for the continued support of the program and allowing us to have the resources and the opportunities to have such excellent representation. So thank you.
Very good. Thank you for the job you do. So when I got the agenda the other day, I was very excited about item C, which is the artificial intelligent pilot project, but I'm going to hold my excitement for 5 minutes and why don't we take a 5-minute break, okay? But
I had written down in my notes why we wouldn't get involved.
Lead us through our artificial intelligence pilot project.
Yes.
All right. So this is to just give you a summary of what we did in our project with Rockwell Automation. They're the company that builds and supplies the processors and different hardware that we use to control our plants, including the water plants. So just to kind of set the stage for what we were studying, this is a schematic of the beginning of the wastewater process. So the first few steps are really quite economical. We're just using screens and gravity to remove contaminants. But by the time you get to the end of the primary clarifiers, there's some stuff in the water that you can't separate physically. There's suspended things that will never settle, and there are dissolved things that you can't just screen out, for example. And that's where the aeration basin comes in, where we did this study. In this tank, we set up an environment for microorganisms to thrive, and those organisms then treat all of these things that are floating around in the water, such as the organics and ammonia. And we provide that environment by mainly by giving them oxygen to breathe and to live. So this is a little schematic of the aeration basin. So wastewater comes in. There's a splitter box that splits the flow up. The most amount of wastewater goes to zone 1. A little bit less goes to zone 2, and then the remainder goes to zone 3. And then everything goes to zone 4 as a polishing zone. Nothing else is fed there. So wastewater goes in. We have the air blowers providing that air, and there's a DO probe to measure dissolved oxygen in each tank and a control valve that can put more air or less depending on where we are compared to the set point. Also in the system, there's that WF for wastewater flow. There's a flow meter on each one of those feeds, and the NH is for ammonia. We have an ammonia probe to measure the load of ammonia going to the tank. So the technology that we used, Rockwell, at this time is calling it artificial intelligence enabled PID. It's not, you know, this isn't a commercialized product yet. You can't go out and buy it, so they haven't come up with a snappy name for it. But PID is pretty old technology that's been around for a long time, and it really just looks at a set point and looks at process value. And it looks at the difference that's there, and it uses some coefficients to make it look bigger than it is, and then move a valve. It's totally unaware of anything else going on around it, and it's feedback. So something has already happened, and then it reacts to that. So this product that we've tested, it uses machine learning, takes in all of this other data around the process to recognize patterns and see what's important to the outcome, and then it adjusts those coefficients in the old controls to make it respond better. So it's really great because we're taking this new technology and it's interfacing with the existing controls. So there wasn't really a whole bunch of rewrite and big changes we had to make in the controls and software of the plant. So what we actually installed was that box that you see on the left there. It has two what they call logics cores. Those are the brains that Rockwell usually puts in a PLC controller. And what's unique about this is it also has two Windows cores, more like a processor and a regular computer. And so the logic cores interact with the rest of the plant. The Windows cores are running the artificial intelligence model and telling the system what adjustments to make. Another advantage to this system is this piece of hardware was installed on the plant network, and then it could talk to any PLC in the plant. So while we only looked at the aeration basin, we could also work on, say, disinfection process, which is controlled by another PLC somewhere else in the plant. So you don't have to buy a piece of hardware over and over again. You just keep applying it to more applications as you see fit. Another reason why this is nice is it is on the plant network. So we were able to connect it to the internet to get Rockwell support, but it does not need an internet connection on an ongoing basis to function. So some of these solutions that people are inventing require a constant connection to the internet and data going back and forth, which for us is a major cybersecurity concern. So this is a really a secure way to implement AI and really minimize the routes that people can take to get in and cause us issues. So as I mentioned, the system looks at all this data and just decides how to optimize the existing PID and get better response. So the actual scope of work, first we needed to install that hardware. That was done by EMWD staff. It was pretty simple to do. Rockwell then modified our existing program just to give us a way to go back to the old system. So we put a software switch here. And so the only programming they did was to let us toggle between the old method and the new method of controlling the process. We wanted to give operations an easy way to go back just in case something went haywire. And then Rockwell configured the AI and the controller. It was pretty neat how that worked. We just sent them 6 months of process data from the historian. They did all of that in their office in Austin, trained the whole system on the desktop, and then they were able to load this into the controller, and it was up and running in a matter of a couple of hours. As part of that, their model is able to recognize the patterns and the things that are important. And so intuitively, and just from our work experience in education, we know what should be important. And their model confirmed that the wastewater flow rate and the ammonia load going into the aeration basin and, of course, the DO were the biggest factors or had the most influence on whether or not we were going to hit our set points that we had in place. So thankfully, we had all the instrumentation required. Everything there ready to go. And so the final step was to run the system with the old controls. We did that for several weeks, and then we turned the controls on, ran it for several weeks, and compared the results. So this is those three-week trends overlaid on each other. The light yellow-colored line is the old system. The green line is running on the artificial intelligence. And in zone one, that's the most heavily loaded zone in the aeration basin. There really wasn't a whole lot of room to do anything here because that air valve is usually full open all the time to provide enough air. However, you can see that the artificial intelligence did do a better job of keeping things closer to the set point, which is that red line. And the thing that was really important to me is the lows didn't dip as low as the old system. So when we over-aerate, we spend some electricity. Our TINs might be higher. But when we under-aerate, we don't fully treat the wastewater, which can cause some issues later on in the process. The trend on the bottom helped us really do a better job of evaluating the effectiveness, and that's a KPI we developed. It's the air used in the basin normalized for that ammonia load and wastewater flow. So ammonia loading changes day to day depending on how much we do water. Weekdays are different than weekends and holidays in terms of the amount of wastewater that comes in. And so we wanted to be able to compare apples to apples, which is why we came up with this normalized metric. So essentially, lower numbers are better on this chart. It means we use less air to treat any given unit of wastewater. And you can see the AI used air more efficiently every day of the test. So this is zone two, the same type of charts, but a little less wastewater fed into this zone. And similar results on tracking DO, and again on the metric, a lot less energy used per unit. Zone three is the same thing. Again, similar impact. And then zone four, I mentioned, we don't feed any new wastewater here. Many hours of the day, the wastewater is fully treated by the time you get here. So this trend is, the basin is extremely hard to control, and the trend's pretty erratic for both systems. But again, on the normalized trend, you can see we really maximized our use of air. So this is a table of the results. When we looked at all the averages and computed it, the AI provided 12 to 30% savings in air delivered to the basin to do the same job. So that's substantial improvement. And I estimated that to be about 960 kilowatt hours per day of energy saved, and at an average of 12 cents is about $42,000 per year. I mentioned it was important to me that the lows in DO don't go very far below the set point. That allowed us to lower our set point from 2.5 to 1.4. We used to keep higher set points to help hedge against those troughs in the trend. But we were able to lower it into 1.4 and still do the same job. And just making that change, I estimated, was another $60,000 in annual savings. There's some other benefits aside from the electricity, which is using less air means we have more opportunity for anoxic conditions and lowering the TINs in the effluent and improving water quality. Also, since we're not dipping as low, we're having fewer incidents of ammonia bleed through, which is more stable for the whole plant, including the tertiary process and disinfection. So when we are able to avoid bleeding ammonia, we use less sodium hypochlorite, which saves chemical money and introduces less TDS to the water, which is good for the region overall. Qualitative benefit that really isn't apparent in the data and the trends is that on the old system, really reacted very poorly in the mornings. So flows are really low in the early morning hours. And then between 8 to 10 o'clock in the morning, all of the wastewater shows up all at once. It's a very steep ramp up in flow as everyone gets up and goes to work and school. So every morning, staff would have to take manual control of those air valves and increase airflow to the basin on the old system. Otherwise, we'd have a really long day of problems with ammonia getting through the basin and trying to run disinfection. When we were running with the AI turned on, staff didn't have to touch these valves or the system at all for days on end. So we really did see that qualitative improvement, too, that doesn't show in the data. So potential future applications for this is I would like to apply this to the disinfection process. Even though the system's running perfectly, just the nature of the basin, you do still get a couple hours of ammonia that comes through, small amounts, which makes it a little tricky to dose sodium hypochlorite perfectly. And this system, I think, could do a great job of fixing that and allowing us to reduce our use of hypo. The technology that we used, I am told they've already improved it, and we could likely get even better results on our trends than I just showed you. Something else that I'm most excited about is they've developed some systems that could tie into variable frequency drives. So we get a lot, or we have the potential to get a lot of information out of those drives about the motors and equipment they're attached to. So their machine learning looks at all that data, and it could quickly recognize when something's abnormal or headed in a negative direction and can alert staff. So you could go and take that equipment offline in a controlled manner before it fails. We could have maintenance check it out and notice that a bearing's going bad or it's out of alignment or something. We can make a repair before there's any major damage or catastrophic failure of the machine. So that's very promising to me. I think could be a huge help in reducing maintenance costs. And that similar type of monitoring, you know, ability to consume large amounts of data, recognize patterns, and provide alerts could also be done on the process. So sometimes there will be minute changes in data, a day-to-day that are hard for a human to perceive, especially when you're busy doing projects and assisting contractors, all these things. These systems can alert operations to an upcoming process upset, which we could prevent before we have a major issue. So that's pretty much it. Rockwell is still very interested in partnering with us on some of these other things. So I continue to keep in touch with them for when they're ready to take the next step and perhaps try something else. I would like to roll even in what we tested here at San Jacinto. I'm very interested in rolling this out to all our other aeration basins. You know, this could really help us at all the plants. So I'm eagerly awaiting Rockwell's decision of how they're going to move forward with this business so we could apply it elsewhere. And that's all I had.
Excellent. I mean, so how long, in your opinion, will it be before we can take the word pilot off of this and simply make these projects that we need to fund and consider?
Yeah, at this point, it's entirely up to Rockwell. I'm really satisfied with how this worked. I think they're still interested in making it better, but we could implement it, and then they could update it as we go. As I mentioned, the actual physical installation was minimal. So at that point, it just becomes software updates. So I'm kind of pushing, like I mentioned, I'm pushing them to finish making up their mind. I did hear that, they're going to be investing more money into this section of the business. So I think they're gearing up to really start making it happen, but they haven't given me any timeline on when it would be an actual commercially available product.
By doing this, would you say that categorizes Eastern as a leader in moving in this direction?
Yes, I would say so. Yeah, we are the first water district that they partnered with on this type of technology. The technology I was talking about regarding the equipment and monitoring assets, I think they did a brief pilot with John Deere tractors, and they had some really great examples over there. So if we were able to do that in the water industry as well, that would be a novel thing for sure.
So yeah, I noticed you used the words exciting and promising, and it does sound very exciting and promising. But since we're helping Rockwell, are we going to get a discount when they go public with it?
Yeah, none of that's been guaranteed or talked about directly, but at least some of these upcoming things that we want to implement. So, for example, we did this pilot. They're letting us keep what we've done in place. It was mentioned that they're looking at us first to test some of these other things at no cost to us. So
we have a benefit.
Yeah, we are getting a benefit out of working with them, for sure.
Besides keeping the items in place, also improved efficiency.
Right, yes.
Hey, Director Armstrong, any questions on this item?
No questions, but looks like it's a really great result, and I think it's always wonderful when you can partner with private industry and improve things, and just looks like a really, really good use of technology or artificial intelligence, so this looks really good.
All right, I look forward to hearing more, Matt. Thank you for bringing this to the board's attention. Yes. Appreciate it very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We will move on to item 6 in our agenda, which is to receive and file various reports. I will make a motion to do so. Director Schlosser, would you like to second that?
Second.
Could I get a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Schlosser?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 3-0. That will bring us to item 7 on the agenda, which is our calendar review. Good morning, Tammy.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. I'm here to go over your calendar. And I'll start with one event of consideration for you is taking place on Thursday, February 24th. It is from the Three Valleys Municipal Water District. It is their leadership breakfast, and it will be an in-person event taking place at the Sheraton Fairplex Hotel in Pomona. And the details can be found on page 5. If you're interested, please let me know. Moving on to page 2 is the board's calendar for the next 2 weeks, followed by page 3 with some upcoming events that are scheduled. I just wanted to make mention of a few changes. For instance, Cal DeSalle has become virtual, and it's a two-half-day session event. And I have listed the times. Of course, they're subject to change, but as of today, this is what they are. The MODOC, we still have a few seats available at our table. That's on Wednesday, February 23rd. That's the MODOC Water Policy Forum and Dinner. And as Pete mentioned, our lobbyists, the AQUA DC conference was changed from March to July 12th through the 14th at the Mayflower Hotel in DC. And we still have about 6 virtual spots left for water reuse. That's March 6th through the 9th. And we also have listed the board meetings and board committee meetings for the next 3 months. Moving on to page 4, we have our joint interagency meetings. And I also wanted to make note that there was a change for the Elsinore meeting. It changed from February 8th to February 14th. In fact, all the meetings have moved to the second Monday of the month as requested by Elsinore, just as a reminder. And no out of office. And then we have our district holiday schedule with President's Day. And that's all I have.
Very good.
Anybody have any updates or changes? That concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. We will go on to director's attendance reports. We'll start with Director Armstrong.
I attended the Menifee City Council meeting with our general manager and with Amanda Fine as well. And our general manager provided an update to the council on really two things. First, all the projects that Eastern has taking place, and particular those that are taking place within the city of Menifee, and sort of the timeline and schedule related to those. And I thought that part got some really good input and feedback related to a couple projects and maybe how we could work together better in terms of coordination on those. So I thought that was really well received, and then proceeded to provide an update as well on current water supply conditions and potential drought this summer, and just sort of what we have in place and programs and assistance and things to look forward to. So I thought that was really an excellent presentation. I thought it was really well received by the council as well. I did not attend the CalDESAL meeting, and then I did attend the meeting that the general manager spoke about already on the resiliency last Monday, and again, was just a really good step forward and a beginning for more collaboration between some of the peer agencies here in Southwest Riverside County.
All right, thank you very much. I attended the MWD Western meeting on January 20th. It was usually our standard meeting, a lot of updates, a lot of things that are with MET and water supply. So always a good meeting. I did go to the Liberty High School dedication event, was introduced. I spoke to some of the facilities people there. They're quite happy with Eastern and all we did to kind of get them going. So that's always good to hear that when we get great feedback about our great employees and how we sometimes jump through hoops to make things happen, that just that really thrills me that we have such a great reputation out there. So Dominagoni West Basin Stakeholders meetings, we had not met in a while, probably due to COVID. Kind of getting back on track with that, I would characterize that meeting, and I'm sure getting MET and the landowners back on the right page and on track. So I think, and Joe, you did a fine job of guiding that so that they're back on track. Had a great meeting with April, discussed some of the new things that, you know, as she mentioned today in the strategic plan, and always enjoyable, always informative of all the good things we're doing. We had our quarterly deferred compensation meeting. There's a couple of the funds that are on watch right now, but there's explanations to those. So I would say that was good. And the amount of money that continues to come in, I mean, we are really getting to the point where, I think it was Laura, remind me, there's a breaking point where we're going to get another discount on our fees just because we have, I think it's $150 million. Yeah, we're approaching that. And again, it's a great program we offer. The fact that we have, again, hats off to the HR and everybody, that especially some of our newer, younger people that guide them into doing something that's not going to pay off for 30 years or so. But it's good that we guide them towards that. I guess the thing caught my attention is one of the target date funds is now 2070? Makes me feel old. But that would be for the newer folks coming in that's going to retire. And then again, I think we've covered the resiliency project. Just a fantastic meeting, and I look forward to getting something on the calendar that sometime this summer that we can come back and have a follow-up meeting for that. So there you go, Director Slauson.
Certainly, yes. I attended the joint meeting with Western. We discussed the normal, just to give you a flavor, the water supply conditions, MWD update, of course, the Paris North Groundwater Recovery Project, Marsh GPA, alternative water supplies for the region, and state arrearages, and a couple other issues. The RCC Foundation, we approved the audit, heard a financial report, investment report, and adopted a diversity statement. I did not attend the Chamber of Commerce meeting, Wake Up, on the 26th. And yesterday at SAPA, we had a legislative update and had a discussion and approved for a replacement for advertising for Mark Norton's replacement. He's the Water Resources and Planning Manager, and he will be given an interim title and position while there's a sort of a transition overlap. That's it.
All right. Very good. Do we have any director's comments or future agenda items?
Yes, my wife often says, when I talk, you know, about being smart, she says, yeah, you have almost an artificial intelligence. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing when she says it.
I will just leave that there. Director Director Armstrong, do you have any comments or future agenda items?
I don't. Thank you.
Very, very good. With that, I understand, Mr. Counsel, we need to do closed session today.
Yes, Mr. Chair. We have three items of existing litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 549.56.9, those items being Allred versus Eastern MWD, Pollock versus Eastern MWD, and San Diego County Water Authority versus Metropolitan Water District.
Very good, and we're going to do that in this room, so we will take about 5 minutes to change over to that. Thank you, everyone. Mr. Counsel, would you like to report out of the closed session agenda items?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the matter of Allred versus EMWD, the board was briefed by special counsel and gave instruction to special counsel. On the matter of Pollock versus EMWD, the board gave instruction to general counsel. On the matter of San Diego County Water Authority versus Metropolitan Water District, the board received a report with no reportable action. That concludes my closed session report.
All right. Very good. With that, we will stand adjourned until February 16th at 9 a.m.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.